Okay, on to the programme now. We say good morning to Jessica. Jessica, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
How are you keeping?
Oh, good. As good as can be, I suppose, with what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and it centres on your father. He's only 54, and on the 1st of August 2022, he was diagnosed with motor neuron disease. Is that correct?
He was, yep.
Obviously that has a devastating impact on him and the whole family to get that news, Jessica.
Yeah, easy. So,
what was the prognosis at the time of the diagnosis? What were you told?
Just that they couldn't really put a time frame on it, but to prepare ourselves that basically what was going to happen to Daddy and how he would deteriorate and how things would go. Now, we were lucky enough that within the first year, there wasn't much of a change until probably April of 2023, where we started to notice, and he's gotten a lot worse.
Significantly worse. What level of movement or mobility does he have now?
None. So from June of 2023, he was in an electric wheelchair. He then had to come out of that and be in a push wheelchair, where now he has nothing at all.
And obviously that means that in terms of feeding him, washing him, you know, going to the bathroom, getting in and out of bed, that all falls down on the family at this point?
Yeah, so it's between my sister and my mum and myself.
Okay.
And for Dad either, he was a young, fit, healthy man before, and it's just not nice for him to depend on his wife and his two daughters to get him out of bed and get him out of the shower. Degrading for him, and it's not nice to watch.
Are you still able to communicate effectively, Jessica?
So he has an eye gaze tablet that he can talk to us through.
Right. It's incredibly difficult, and a lot of people listening will be able to relate to this. Unfortunately, we do seem to be hearing lots of cases of motor neuron disease, and I think even and more so once we had high profile cases that sort of opened up the conversation more so. Are you finding that since this has come into your life that you're learning of more people who have this condition?
We are, yeah, definitely.
In terms of care or assistance, am I correct in saying that towards the middle of last year you had to sort of acquire some? Did you privately, or was it provided to you?
No, so we were convinced we wanted to care for Daddy ourselves. We didn't want cares, but we were told that for Daddy that we couldn't care for him because he needed people that was properly trained. And we have yet to get cares. The HSE has come back and said, because Daddy is under the age of 65 and doesn't have cancer, he's not a priority.
Right. So even though you've made the decision that you would accept the services of carers, there's none available for you?
There's none available in that area. No.
And this would have been a big conversation with your father, because obviously very proud. He probably would have preferred not to have a situation where his daughters and his wife were caring for him. So it was a big step, presumably, for him to okay bringing in external care at that time.
Yeah. He was happy enough with it. He was all right with us getting cares. And it was me and my sister and my mother that didn't want them.
Okay.
But we're told that for Daddy, we had to just let them.
Right. So, I mean, as you've listeners have been listening to, it's clear that your dad needs the assistance of carers. You've been sort of okayed for them, but you've been told, and as you've outlined, because he's under 65, because he doesn't have cancer, he's not on a priority list. He's not top of the list. Anyone, presumably, that comes forward who is diagnosed with cancer or over 65, they will always be ahead of your father. Is that how it feels?
Yeah, it is. And back in October of 2023, he was in the Foyle Hospice, and they told us that Daddy had only a few weeks to live. And even when we were told that, they still couldn't get carers to come out to the house and care for Daddy. Now, luckily, he's still here, but it would have meant that we were still left with it, even though he had been told he wouldn't make it to the end of October, start of November.
And you're being told not only you're not a priority at this point, but there's no carers in the area.
Yep, they're saying they can't get anyone in the area.
And are you in the Republic or the North, Jessica? Sorry, just to be clear.
We're in Olive and Ashone.
In Ashone, okay. Yeah. And we're going to make as many representations on your behalf as we possibly can be, to, and I presume you have as well, but look, to politicians, to the HSC, to whomever might be responsible or could have an input into this, because the only one reason that you would even dream of, I presume, of speaking publicly at this point, Jessica, is because you need the help, and it's very difficult for you as a family.
Taking valuable family time away from us when we're caring for him 24 hours. Now, as much as we do enjoy it, it's starting to strain, Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And as it gets more difficult, we're going to end up hurting him or hurting ourselves.
Okay. So we're in the Inishowen area. And at this point, as you say, he's not being seen as a priority. That kind of, I imagine, when you're told that, when you see your dad and how much you all love him, and for his situation to be framed like that, it adds pain to an already incredibly difficult situation, Jessica, because you start going, well, why is he not as important as somebody else?
Yeah, it does.
Right, okay. Well, will you leave it with us, and we'll make inquiries, if that's okay. Contact the various agencies, see what the situation is, we'll keep you informed, Jessica. But we are going to try our best to try and highlight this, as you have with us today, and see if we can make any advances on this. I hope that anyone with any influence who would know Jessica's story and is in an office somewhere could do the right thing and make a decision and give this family the help that they need. Things like that do happen, Jessica. We hope they will, but we'll make our inquiries as well and just see what we can do. Hopefully something comes from it, because it's clear that you have the time that you have with your father, you want to maximise that, of course.
We do, yeah.
Okay. Jessica, thank you for your time, and best
thank
wishes
you.
To everyone. I know it's a very difficult time for you all. Right. Okay, as I say, if there's anyone with influence in that area, please, we're going to make contact with the various agencies to try and help. But if you can help, please get in touch with us, and we can help you to help that family. I don't think there's anyone working, and I hope there's no one working in a healthcare that in a position of influence, power, that wouldn't say, right, that's a case that we need to look at here. They don't know how long they have with their dad. They want to maximise the time. They're struggling to do it on their own. Because at this point now, he can only move his eyes. Right, we'll stay on that, by the way, and I'll give you updates on that story as we get any further advances. A caller says, back to some comments here, I'm just wondering, would anybody that drives electric cars buy 45-year-old model? It's like buying second-hand phone battery, wouldn't last as long, so more charging points needed as range wouldn't be as good. But if the truth be told, how many people are driving cars now that are older than, I don't know. You see very few cars now that are older than 2008. I'll cut it at that, because I think 2008 ICE-engined cars are, once you go under 2008, the tax can be more expensive. So I think most people, the majority of people, aren't buying 45-year-old cars. You might have some that do, of course, because there are vintage cars and all that type of stuff. But the majority of cars that people use on a day-to-day basis, I would argue, are 2008 up, or even more newer than that. Now, that's not to say there aren't people driving older cars, but if we're talking about, you know, typical of this country, no plan in place for anything. Eamon Ryan tells us all to go electric. All he does is create problems. We have to use smokeless coal. It takes hours to get it going in an open fire. We're living on one pension and now have to use heating, though we can't afford it. When are we going to get hydrogen cars? The jury's out on hydrogen, that hydrogen might be adapted for heavy goods vehicles and what have you. I would follow some people with influence in the electric car market, and they don't believe that hydrogen will be generally adopted. Now, of course, if you've got an interest in electric, you don't want hydrogen, do you? That's like if you've got an interest in petrol and diesel, you don't want electric. But people with influence in that area seem to think that hydrogen will not be practical for your domestic car, but might be for lorries and tractors and what have you. We'll wait and see. Hi, Gregory. Car charging points. I heard on another radio show that there's a new system just launched where you can book someone's home charging point to charge your vehicle as long as they are registered on the program. It's just like Airbnb for charging points. Interesting. How widely it'll be used, I don't know. That sounds to me like someone who's gone on Dragon's Den. Sounds like a great idea, but we'll see. Maybe it's bigger than I anticipate, but I don't know. I mean, people rent out their parking spaces next to the airport, so I wouldn't be surprised at anything. What about the price of replacement batteries for electric cars? Children are forced into crawling into mines in Africa to get the cobalt and nickel for the batteries. Is that acceptable so rich people can continue to drive? I don't know, yes, but look where we get our oil and what they do with that money. Do you know what I mean? If you want to go down that route again, I hope I don't sound like I'm a contrarian today, but if we're worried about how cobalt and nickel is being farmed, well, we also need to worry about what's being done with all the money that's being made from the oil industry. What are they doing with that money, and how do they run their countries, and how do they treat people in their countries? Do you know what I mean? We're supporting their countries. Greg, be careful about misleading people about the cost of servicing of electric vehicles. I've heard reports of servicing being more expensive for EVs. I don't have an EV, and only saying what I've heard. It would be interesting. Garages could give an idea of what it costs. Well, I had an electric vehicle for a couple of years, and the servicing was minimal because there are very few moving parts. There is the motor now, in terms of what is done to the motor, but in terms like in all the stuff that can go in an ICE engine car, I didn't see that. The Minister for Transport held a conference sometime last year to promote electric cars. When he went to plug the car in, it wouldn't work. The newspapers all reported on this, and it's just so ironic. A perfect example of why I will stick to petrol. And fair play to you, by the way. I'm not trying to... I'm not in any way trying to convince people one way or other. Padraig Pearce defended the use of the Irish language by a cart owner in Letterkenny Courthouse. Okay, interesting history. This is the type of stuff, if I go somewhere, that interests me. Hi, Greg. Sorry, I must have missed the highlights of the men's soccer team in the World Cup in 2023. Just saying that if people want to see the ladies in action, be in Gaelic soccer, boxing, basketball, they'd be pleasantly surprised at the skill and talent in women's sport. Hear, hear. Back to electric cars. I agree, the backup for electric cars is shocking. Now, come here, seriously, I'm all for a dad joke, but you're taking the mickey now. Yeah, they're upside down. Shannon, can you rotate them 180 degrees? Thank you, perfect, well done. Thank you so much, Shannon. Isabel and the team in Donegal Hospice say they can... Caroline, I'm only joking. You know, give it out to me while I'm on air. This is important. Isabel and the team at the Donegal Hospice say they can offer Jessica and her dad some home support. Okay, can I just say, Isabel and everyone at the Donegal Hospice, I couldn't be a bigger fan of the Donegal Hospice. Many of us have been touched by what they do there or might be in the future. Isabel has gone on to us from the Donegal Hospice to say that they can offer Jessica and her dad some home support. Now, that does not, I don't know what the level of that support might be, right? But that does not mean now that we will not continue our inquiries elsewhere. But just off the back of that phone call in a couple of minutes, Jessica, thank you so much. And all of your brilliant team at the Donegal Hospice, they say they will offer Jessica and her dad some home support. We'll put them in contact with each other, okay? And see what comes from that. So, it was weighing on me, and I feel that hopefully now that's to some extent that will improve that situation. We'll keep you updated on that. Now, as we mentioned at the start of the program, the price of a national stamp is going up. Garrett Bridgman is CEO of On Post Commerce Mails and Parcels, and he joins us now. Hiya, Garrett.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the reasons why, and they're kind of self-explanatory, how popular is national posting now? I mean, is it mostly banks sending out statements and what have you, or what is the sort of demographic, if that's the right word, of the national postal system?
Yeah, so obviously what we've seen the last number of years is we've seen a big increase in people sending parcels. And people sending parcels from, you know, personal parcels to people, obviously we're all buying more online. We've seen a huge growth in that over the last number of years. But in terms of our mail service, really what we've seen is about 80% of the mail that goes to our system would be sent by banks, utilities, sending kind of business communications to their customers. So there's still about 20% of people who send personal communications, you know, to each other, gifts or cards like Christmas or birthdays or, you know, Valentine's or wedding invitations. So there is still people sending a lot of mail. I mean, we do actually deliver over 1 million letters every day still in the country, which is still a very big number.
It certainly is. But the cost of doing so has increased, and I presume OnPost can't absorb those costs. So that's where we're seeing these increases.
Yeah, well, really what we've done is we've kept these increases to a minimum. We don't like putting the price of our products up. But what we've done is we've put a 5-cent increase in the year, which is about 3.7%, which is below inflation. And really the necessity for doing it is to, you know, our costs have gone up. And actually, if you look at our input costs, we're heavily weighted in terms of things like fuel, vehicles, transport, energy. And they're actually up 6% this year on last year. So, you know, big increase, but we've kept them to a minimum. But what we'd say to customers is, like, you know, well, first of all, we're still way below the EU average, which is 173. And we're below our neighbours in the UK for the first time ever. And we still offer, you know, one of the highest quality of services of mail in not only in Europe, but in the world. But we'd say to customers out there, because everybody has a few stamps knocking around, they have them in their wallet, or they might have some Christmas stamps left over. The stamps that you have today are still valid, and you can use them in the new price range. So they're still valid and you can still use them. And then for like our business customers who are incredibly, incredibly important to us and our consumers, there's discounting available as well. So if you buy a booklet of 10 stamps, it's still 135.
A lot of people have businesses have these sort of these machines that they put their letters into and it's not a physical stamp. Is that what a digital stamp is? What's a national digital stamp? It says it won't go up the same. So I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, so a digital stamp, really what came about this is that, you know, we've all been there where, you know, we want to post something to somebody, but we can't get to the post office. It's the weekend and the post office is closed, or it's late at night and your business has been working. So what you can do is you can buy an actual digital stamp from OnPost, download the app, and for €2, you can actually download the app, put in your credit card details, and we'll send you a 12-digit code. You write that digit onto your envelope, and that item then will be delivered the next working day.
But
what you'll
do
is you'll get a text to tell you when it's delivered, which is really, really handy.
So it's like registered post to it. It's not like registered post, but the end game is. So how much is a digital stamp?
A digital stamp is €2, and that's not going up in price as part of the increases. And the great thing is we're launching an international digital stamp later at the end of this month, because a lot of us are sending cards and communications to our friends or, you know, across the water or worldwide. And really getting that text notification to say your card is being delivered is fantastic, because it gives you that comfort of mind, especially if you're sending something internationally.
After Christmas, Gareth, and listen, this might not be in your area of expertise, but after Christmas, we got a rush of calls and then it started a big conversation and dozens of people posted stuff to Australia. Be it envelopes, you know, like cards, envelopes and parcels. And we had dozens of people that they weren't delivered. Now, I have no doubt that OnPost got them to the ferry or the plane or whatever it might be. Have you heard of this, Gareth? Any insight as to what's happening over there? Is it because of the type of stuff we're posting, or is there issues with the Australian Postal Services? Again, the answer is not my area of expertise. That's fine too.
Yeah, no, I mean, we obviously a large part of our traffic and a large part of our customers' product goes internationally, and we deal with all the international posts. We haven't heard anything specifically around Australia and are having any issues out there. So what I'd say to any customer listening, if you have any issues in relation to any of your items, we have an award-winning customer services team who just ring in and they will answer any queries I have. And they are known for, you know, going to the ends of the world to find your item and find out where it is, if it hasn't been delivered. But it should have been. But as I said, we haven't heard anything specifically about Australia during Christmas.
Yeah, and it was generally accepted. If there is an issue, it's on that side rather than this side. All right, Gareth, thanks for your time. Gareth Bridgman, CEO of OnPost Commerce, Mail and Parcels. Some comments here. Totally agree. Shingles is a terrible condition. My 86-year-old father contracted it in his face in 2007, and still suffers this day with after effects, as did our earlier caller. I mean, he's pleased now that he's not having to put on patches to relieve the acute pain, but still gets the tingles or the tinges or whatever you might describe it. There's another listener whose father had it. Hi, Greg, would you play Come Home, Danny Boy, please, by the late, great Seamus McGee? May he rest in peace from an his own listener. And indeed, there was a huge outpouring of goodwill and nice messages and nice words for Seamus McGee after his passing was confirmed yesterday. Caroline, we have it lined up. When am I playing that song? We'll play it a little later, and we might play out with that, because Daniel O'Donnell is going to speak to us just to pay his tribute as well. And sometimes I think when Daniel does that, he's speaking on behalf of all of us, if you know what I mean, or those out there listening who, with a love of music. I think he articulates things almost on the music community's behalf, if that makes sense. So he's going to join us a little later in the programme. All these counties outside Dublin should pay the employees the same wage as Dublin employees. That comes in from Doc, yeah. Greg, there was a poll done and over 75% don't want mass immigration. Yeah, I'm familiar with the poll. I'm not contesting the poll. It was done about 11 months ago. There was lots of questions in it in terms of unlimited immigration at all, you know, and I can't emphasize, I'm not contradicting anyone out there, right? But the exact facts are incredibly important, i.e., what was the question, what was the response? I'll get the poll. I'm not contesting the poll. I'm not saying it's wrong, okay? But there were different questions contained within that poll. And the way it's been reported in the months afterwards, it's not exactly how it is. It doesn't disprove the poll, okay? But I just believe that facts are so incredibly important. Greg, the personal people who are spraying this graffiti around Letterkenny are not doing anything good for the cause of Christ. Graffiti on public spaces is, when done without permission, is antisocial behaviour. It's vandalism. Wrongdoing is vandalism, and even though it's within the law, it's illegal. Jesus Christ never broke the law. He fulfilled the law. Therefore, this behaviour is doing nothing to help the cause for which it is intended. That comes in from Mary. Not a nice story what happened to that lady in the hospital car park who didn't have the full money for the parking fee, but I kind of do not blame the people who didn't help. It's scary times with scams and whatnot. People are just being cautious. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I get you. Yep. There is an element of that, but this is a woman in a hospital car park looking for 50 cent, who's clearly pregnant in the cold without a coat, but I take your point. The standard of women's sport is lower than the men's because a difference in access to practice and training, repetition to the point of automaticity, if that's a word, is what is required in any training. That's far easier to achieve if sport is your full-time job rather than something you're forced to fit around your job, which is a point that Maya was making as well. No consultation about the 30 or 50 Ukrainians being housed at the pub in our area of the Gaeltacht, which will now lose its Gaeltacht status because there are more Ukrainians than Irish speakers in the village. Does the eradication of Irish culture not merit public discussion? Yeah, of course it does. Have the conversation, give us a call, or we'll call you and come on and talk to us about that. No problem if you want to discuss it. I'm just listening to the views of people on women playing men's sport. Well, I'm a man, and I have no problem with it at all. You have to do is look at the Ireland's women's soccer team. They would beat the men's team, no problem. And as for boxing, it would be a brave man to get into the ring with Katie Taylor, just my opinion. Rachel Blackmore, one of the best jockeys in the world, and is female, another, on the gender balance in sport. People have that much to think about that they're thinking about women in sport. They're very used to seeing men playing. By highlighting women in sport, you're wasting valuable airtime when you could talk about more important issues. People are used to men playing in sport as they're stronger. Girls are only playing in sport recently and people aren't used to seeing them, says that listener. Okay, I'm surprised, point of view. Listen, there's always something more important to talk about, but this light and shade, different subjects, different topics. But appreciate it. Let me see. Electric cars. David, who is a he loves his electric car. He's a fan of his electric car, but he just can't trust the network to charge it. David is right about electric car plugs, and hybrid cars is the way to go. Best of both worlds. No range anxiety. I'm driving my second plug-in hybrid Kia Sorento for my motors in Drumkeen. Very pleased. That comes in from Michael in Drumkeen, who didn't travel too far for his car. Well done. Let me see. By the way, we have Minister Eamon Ryan on the programme tomorrow. I want to get his views on houses being rebuilt in this county to old building standards. I just can't wait to hear what he has to say about that. And not to catch him out, but just to get the Green Party leader, who is a member of the government coalition, to explain why he thinks it's a good decision that we rebuild houses in 2024 to 2008 standards, or is it 2005? 2008 standards. And we'll probably go into, yes, but there is a grant available, but why is there a grant available? Just should it not be more streamlined? So I can't wait to ask him about that and get a definitive answer for the people that are affected by it. I'm very interested in what is the government's commitment to the 10T road projects, bridge in Letterkenny, etc. Is it on the cards? what is the time frame? The last time I spoke to him, there was no time frame. Is there a time frame now? Are things moving ahead? Maybe he has a surprise announcement. I haven't a clue. And other issues as well. So it won't be live because of he's got other appointments, so I'm going to come in early and record it. If you want to message 086 60 25,000, I can't reel off a whole load of stuff. We have a short period of time, and people are inclined to answer questions in a long format, so you don't get as many questions because they want to be thorough, of course. That would be the reason. But we're going to do that tomorrow and play it out then tomorrow after 10. So those are a couple of issues. There are more in the back of my head, but things I think very important that we got a bit of clarity on. You know, I mean, we're talking about, is the government fully committed to funding and seeing the progression of that route when everything is dotted and crossed? When is it going to happen? What's the time frame? Give us a time frame. He knows he's coming up here. He knows he's going to be asked about it. So if there is a time frame, we'll hear it. If there isn't, I think maybe should we start questioning whether it will happen or not as well. There's very little road building activity going on in this county at the moment. There's that work at the McGrory's Brae. I think there's a bit of work out in Glenties. Outside of that, what else is happening? Is there any work on significant road development in Donegal happening at the moment or even in the pipeline? Now, I'm open to correction. Is there anything? We've got that work at McGrory's Brae, which is really for cycling, but also will improve road safety. And I think there's a bit of a work going out in Glenties. But other than that, are there any major roadworks planned? Anything that might actually happen? Looking forward to a conversation with Pat the Cope Gallagher. He's on the programme next. I want to know what his plans are. Hopefully he'll answer the questions. He'll answer me one way or other. Whether if he's made a decision, he'll tell us. If he hasn't, he won't. But we'll find out, because I think, I personally, and I've said it on the programme before, I think Pat the Cope Gallagher has the potential to have a really significant influence on the general election in this county when that is finally called. But we'll get his views, his intentions on MEP-ship as well. That's coming up in a couple of minutes. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme, and it is a good morning to former MEP, former TD, Pat the Cope Gallagher. Good morning, Pat. Thank you so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, you had been tipped for to run for Fianna Fáil in Europe. Of course, you've got a track record, as I mentioned, as a former MEP. Were you open to that idea at a point and has since changed your mind, or what has been the process there, Pat?
Well, the background, Greg, to it is this, that the party invited nominations from the membership throughout the huge constituency of Midlands, Northwest, and of course that was right down to Leigh Shoffley. And the last time that that constituency was in place was in 2014 when I ran and lost by a mere few hundred votes out of about 500,000 votes. But having said all that, I didn't look for any nominations. I was surprised, actually, to get a call from headquarters early in December to say that I had received sufficient number of nominations to go before convention. And rather than decide immediately, I thought, with respect to those who nominated me from Donegal and other parts, that I should give it some consideration. So that there was no difficulty with that. I did that over the Christmas. And, of course, we had the untimely death of our good friend Noreen McGarvey, so I decided that I wasn't going to consult with anybody until last weekend, and I decided finally that I wouldn't contest it, that it meant I would have to embark on a huge campaign throughout all of the constituency, and I'm familiar with that from the past, and I'm as physically able as I was when I embarked on a campaign in Connaught Ulster in 1994, but I also took into consideration that there was another candidate nominated from Donegal who has been out and about for about 6 months. That's Senator Niall Blaney. And I certainly wasn't going to be the one that was going to split the Donegal vote. And I took the decision at the weekend. I've written to the membership in Donegal to tell them that I wasn't going to contest convention, and I was calling on them to support the Donegal candidate.
Okay, and that's as clear as can possibly be. We will talk about the European elections, but in terms of your future, Pat, you know, this is regardless of anyone's political party, it's not a commentary on that, but many people will say that you are as busy as any TD still now in terms of assisting people and constituency work. The only thing missing, of course, is the fact that you aren't actually elected to the Dáil. we could have a general election late this year. It's probably early next year. At this point, have you decided whether or not you would be interested in running for national elected government again?
Well, just let me preface my remarks by saying, since I lost the seat in February 2020, I have been extremely busy every day of the week responding to calls from former constituents who ring me for advice and for assistance. And of course, while I lost my seat, Greg, I haven't lost the contacts that I had built up over a period of almost 40 years. And once one calls me, and if they have an issue they want me to raise, I know immediately how to handle that. I know immediately who to contact. But you're quite right. I don't, I'm not officially a public representative, so therefore I cannot submit parliamentary questions to issues that I want to raise. But I have plenty of colleagues, of former colleagues in the Dáil who are prepared and can do that for me. So once I have the approval of people to make representations on their behalf, then I can do that. So I'm unofficially a public representative all the time, and I think that gives rise to the view that, well, I must still be interested. I'm not doing that because I'm interested in becoming a candidate in the general election. I'm doing that because that's what I've been used to over all of these years. So to answer your question, I haven't given consideration to the next election yet, but I do believe that it'll be sooner rather than later, even though Eamon Ryan said, I think it was in your programme this morning or on Highland, that he felt it should run until the end. But Leo Varadkar, in contrast to that, has said at all times, well, he's not going to call an election in the winter again. Mm. Now, there's another factor, Greg, that should be taken into consideration. When I went for Europe with 24 hours notice in 2009, because you might recall, I was back in the Dáil then, and we had two candidates, Shannon Yachtin and Pascal Mooney. Shannon Yachtin, who succeeded me, decided that he was withdrawing his name. And to be honest with you, I got 48 hours notice, and I went and I got into the campaign. Now, then at that time, there was no dual mandate, so there had to be a by-election. Now, the government can, in those days, could keep pushing out the by-election every time it was raised in the Dáil if they had the majority. And then Piers Doherty took a case to the courts, and the judge ruled that if if there was a vacancy in the Dáil, the by-election had to be held within 6 months. So we presume now that there may be two or three TDs elected to the European Parliament who will relinquish their seats immediately, and the by-election would have to be held before the middle of December. And then if they lost those by-elections, they wouldn't have a majority. So that's the view that I have, that they might decide to go.
So with all that considered, and I know like there's internal conversations that happen, and what will, if Charlie McConnell is running, if he is, and if it's the right thing to do strategically, because I know you're a Fianna Fáil man through and through. But if the cards fall in a certain way, it's not something you're ruling out, you would be, or is it something that you want to do? Because there's lots of people listening that are really keen to find out your intentions, if you'd be prepared to share them with us, depending on all the caveats that I've mentioned.
I would like to think I could share them with you, but I'm not in that position, Greg, to do that. But let me say that if there's to be a strategy, then there has to be a candidate in the old Northeast,
sure,
and in the old Southwest that I represented up until 2016 when I was elected for all of Donegal. So, and then we have some very able councillors, and of course, that would have to be taken into consideration, and there are others there. So I'm not going to stand in the way of any of those people, but it's much too early, you know, to take any decision. Yeah. So we'll have to wait to see.
Yeah, you're not ruling yourself out, and if the party approached you, I think you'd probably respond favourably is the reading. I'm not going to ask you to reiterate. You've been very clear, but that's the reading I'm taking.
Well, okay, well. I can't confirm or deny the reading that you're taking. That's great.
So I'll have to do another reading on my reading on what you've said. But anyway, come here. Before that, anyway, we have the local elections, which are going to be very important. And that you said in a press statement, that's your priority, to work with the party to sort of maximise the vote and the returned councillors as part of the local government elections in June, a date we do know.
Yeah, well, I've always said that the University of Politics is in Lifford in the local elections. I ran for the locals. I got elected in a few years afterwards. I went to the Dáil. So I've learned a lot there. And the local elections are vitally important. But if we look at the local elections in 2019, Greg, Sinn Féin did very badly in those elections. And we thought at the time that Leo Varadkar would have gone to the country, but no, he procrastinated and went on until January 2020 when he decided to call an election because he was under pressure to do it. He didn't do it of his own accord. He did it because the rural independents were putting down a motion of no confidence in one of the government ministers, and it was felt that they would have lost that. That's why he went at that time. So I think he may well go, and from sources within the government are telling me that we should be ready for an election possibly in September. And of course, if they do badly in the local elections, that might decide that he would carry on. It's very difficult to call. But there was one thing I would say, that when we don't have to go to the country at a particular time, we shouldn't have to go in the middle of the winter. I experienced that when possibly you weren't around at all in 1982, when we had an election in June 81, when I was first elected. Then it wasn't the call of the Taoiseach. The Taoiseach of the day lost the confidence of the Dáil. We had a winter election in February 82 and another one in November 82. Those were necessary, but when it's not necessary to call it in the winter, it should be in the summer, spring or autumn.
Excellent stuff. Thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it, Pat. That's former MEP, former TD, Pat the Cope Gallagher. You are tuned to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. You can text us, of course, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Lots of you messaging in as it relates to electric cars and shingles and other issues. If we don't get through them today, trust me, we will tomorrow. We do appreciate every single contact we receive from you here on the 9 till noon show. So it was with great sadness that we learned that Seamus McGee passed away, a fabulous singer, a legend, he's been described as by many. And it's one of those passings, I think, that people who've grown up to and have memories associated with his music, that they feel, it feels like a personal loss as well. He was short taught piano and accordion by Leo Brennan, father of Enya, Marie Brennan. His primary school teacher, Master Duggan, is the father of Noel and Padraig, both of whom are members of Clannad. So through his friendships, his learning, both educational, i.e. in, you know, regular subjects, but music, all intertwined with some of the best.
Back in the 60s, I remember Irish men emigrating to build themselves a better life all over the world. For some, it didn't turn out that way. You see, for one reason or another, the bottle became their best friend. So they went on the streets to try and hide the pain, the heartache, and the shame. This song is dedicated to them, their families, and their friends. In the West End of London, I saw him sitting there. He called out, "Hey young man, what's the time?" And as I went to tell him, I saw that he was wearing an emblem from old Ireland on his coat. I said, "I see you're Irish. What part do you come from?" He looked at me with peering eyes.
Okay, that is the late and great Seamus McGee. Daniel O'Donnell, hopefully you can hear me now. Good morning to you.
Hey, Greg, I don't know what happened.
No, do you know what? I know exactly what happened. I know exactly what happened, and it's completely my fault. I had the wrong fader up. My apologies, Daniel. Yes, we thought it fitting to speak to you in memory of Seamus McGee. A lot of people moved by his learning of his passing yesterday.
Yes, I think everybody's shocked, you know, to hear that Seamus had passed away. I had spoken to him on Tuesday. I rang him on Monday. I heard that he wasn't well, and I phoned on Monday, and I didn't get him. And then he phoned me back on Tuesday, and, you know, I was asking him how he was, and he said that he had been in hospital and was having a few setbacks, but hopefully, I mean, the way I left it was, I'm glad that they're, you know, getting you better and that hopefully you'll be home soon. Never did I think, you know, when I heard on actually Patrick Hope did let me know first that he had passed away. It was a shock, you know. And just when you listen to "Come Home, Danny Boy," there, I suppose that's the song most that, you know, we associate with Seamus, because they wrote it and it was a big hit for him, I suppose, and it brought home to so many immigrants that were living away, and it was the story of so many. But he had a great love of music, he had a great love of country music, and he sang Jim Reeves songs as good, if not better, than anybody else, you know. And when I started out, Seamus was on the road at that time, and, you know, we did a lot of things at different shows together. And yes, I mean, I know a lot of people will be very sad for his passing, but, you know, we need to send our sympathies to his family, you know, to Sarah and to, you know, to the children, to Cian and Kieran and Cian and all his own immediate family and friends. It's just such a sad time. We're never ready for somebody's passing, be it sudden or if somebody's sick. But it is a big, big shock. And, you know, his music, I'm sure is playing and many homes around home today, and his memory, and people are remembering their and memories of Seamus, just as I am.
But in a way, hopefully that's seen as a beautiful gift for the family in time and the family and friends, in that, you know, obviously this is a very personal loss, but it's a shared loss. And you know, hopefully they get comfort from others sharing in that because of the great impact he had on their lives and the love people had for his music. In other words, whilst very sadly he has left this world to a better place, he lives on through his music and his contribution and all he achieved and the people he touched.
He will, and for many people, that's the case. And there's many fans of Seamus, I know, that will be very sad today, you know, on hearing of his passing. But a lot of songs, I mean, I mentioned "Come Home, Danny Boy," but there was a lot of songs that Seamus made his own. And, you know, I'm sure that they'll be played, and you're probably playing them there. I'm away at the minute, so I'm not hearing what's been played. But I really think it's so important for the family to know that we're all thinking about them. And that's all you can do. You know, there's nothing can take away the sense of loss that they'll be feeling.
Yeah.
But he did leave a great, a lot of, you know, give a lot of comfort to people through his music. I know that from different people who I would have met, and especially "Come Home, Danny Boy." People absolutely loved that song. You know, himself and his cousin Danny wrote it, and you know, it'll be forever the song, I suppose, that when we think in Seamus, that we'll always remember.
And that is what we will play out with. Thank you for your time this morning, Daniel. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much,
Greg. Okay. Take care. Best wishes to you and all. Okay. That is Daniel O'Donnell paying tribute to the County Donegal singer Seamus McGee, who very sadly passed away. We'll be back with the 9 till noon show tomorrow from 9. We have our Friday panel. We'll have that interview with Eamon Ryan. That's entertainment and so much more besides. But for me, Greg Hughes, and Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, and Shannon working flat out in the programme, have a lovely Thursday, and we'll leave you with Seamus McGee and... this is his track, as you heard from Daniel O'Donnell, the one that perhaps is most associated with him.
in the West End of London. I saw him sitting there. He called out, "Hey, young man, what's the time?" And as I went to tell him, I saw that he was wearing an emblem from old Ireland on his coat. I said, "I see you're Irish. What part do you come from?" He looked at me with peering eyes of shame. "I come from dear old Donegal, but it's been so long ago. Still voices keep calling out my name. Come home, Daddy boy, to where you belong. Back to Buncrana, back to your home. And walk down through Clonmany or around the Isle of Dove. Come home, Danny boy, to the land where you belong." God knows I tried to build a better life since I left my homeland, but the pressures of life were just too much to bear. So I walked the streets of London and found comfort in the wine. But I still hear strange voices in the air.